Okay. Welcome to another Launch It podcast. As always, you got me, Matt.
We got myself, KP, and today we got Sophia from Musket Transport joining us. She'll be joining us for our 2021 edition of Women in Trucking. We had an excellent conversation last year with Jennifer, so we thought we'd follow up and, you know, see what has changed, what improvements have been made. I know when we last spoke, there's a lot of programs being introduced. So kind of just following up to see how those have been implemented and the progress made. And I'll let Sophia take from here to introduce herself and see what she's all about.
Hi, everyone. So my name is Sophia, and I work for Musket Transport. I'm the Corporate Communications Officer, and I also have the same role at our private career college, which is Commercial Heavy Equipment Training, and we refer to it as CHET. And there's been so much progress that has actually happened, particularly due to the pandemic. I think we've been able to address a lot of the concerns for drivers, especially when it comes through other organizations that are leading in the trucking world. For example, Women Trucking's Federation of Canada. They've always done an excellent job on lobbying on behalf of female drivers. And the same goes for Truck Training Schools Association of Ontario, TTSAO. Because there has been a lot of awareness about drivers and the industry due to the pandemic being an essential service, there's been a lot of advancements that have happened, whether it's access to public washrooms or keeping those pit stops open during the pandemic so that the supply chain isn't interrupted. I think these are great wins for us, and we as an industry should capitalize it even more. There is a lot of stigma that's unfortunately associated with trucking. Even when it comes to transportation as a sector, we are, I would say, looked down upon versus others, whether it's rail, ship, or air. They seem to have a bit more of a luxurious appeal, whereas trucking always has this really dirty type of stereotype because it's over the road. You are going in and out of shipping yards if you're in containers. Trailers still has its own stigmas as well. And I think that because we're getting our time in the media light, we should really educate the public and show the advancements that have been made. There's been so much disruption in our industry because of technology. And I think that's a huge win. Cabs are now beautifully designed. You can really be any type of person, individual, in order to be a driver. It really has so much more to do with a lifestyle choice, as opposed to being any particular gender or body type. That doesn't really come into play anymore with the type of role that is required for driving. And I think that podcasts such as this and other ways that we can share the information and insights about our industry is what we have to continue to work on. And from our perspective as a business, Musket Transport's a private carrier, and we understand that in order for us to get more drivers into the cab, we have to start at the training level. So we're very lucky to have a private career college, so we do have that ability to ensure there's high quality in training. So I'm not sure if the two of you are aware about the lobbying that had happened in order to introduce the mandatory entry level training program in Ontario, but that was a huge win for the province. We're the first one in Canada to introduce something like that. So now it's mandated to have 103.5 hours to get a commercial license, but CHET, we've done 200 hours for an AZ program since our inception. So we really do kind of take it to the next level when it comes to training. As many other carriers will also tell you, training does not end when you get your license. There's your road test for the carrier. Then you also have to have ongoing training and mentorship programs and opportunities to have ongoing education and training throughout your career as a driver as well. It's very fundamental that you continue to update your skill sets and to become a safe and efficient driver. So there's also an environmental component to it with how you can have anti-idling policies. There's a Smart Driver Highway Trucking Program. I mean, I could really kind of go on and on forever about the advances that have been made in our industry.
That's great. You know, one of the things that you kind of touched upon, I want to kind of go back on. It's funny how the industry of trucking has changed, because, you know, in the 80s, trucking was more luxurious. You had Sylvester Stallone doing Over the Top, takes the hat, puts it back. You haven't really had a good trucking movie since then where it highlights the necessity of trucking. And you're right, it's moved on to the other industries and make it more luxurious and more, but they're not necessarily are. The other thing I found, I feel why truckers have a bad reputation, and you guys can probably disagree with me or agree with me, is because we have the most exposure to them. I'm on the highway. I don't see a boat next to me.
Yeah.
I don't see a plane getting in my way. I see that big 53-footer. I see a 40-foot container. I'm nervous. He's barreling down on me. And that's why I feel a lot of that stigma gets in the way, right?
Yeah, there's a lot more, I guess, you hear or see more truck accidents as well compared to like a plane crashing down or something like that, right?
Exactly.
Yes. Right?
Yes, and sorry, go ahead. Well, it has a lot to do with how the media reports on us as well, because it influences public perception. So you're correct that most civilians, when they're having any exposure to a truck, it's on the road. And it does make people nervous just because of the sheer volume that you're hauling. And depending on what you're hauling as well, it could make people even more nervous. I think that there actually should be a lot more training for regular drivers as well with how they can safely approach and drive by a truck as well. It's an educational training point that I think should be addressed, and that way everyone's safer on the road. It's not just about truck drivers being safe drivers. All drivers should be safe drivers. But a lot has to do with the fact that they only report on accidents, which they should absolutely happen and they should be reported on, but at the same time, nothing else about our industry is being disclosed. For example, the advancements in technology or the fact that there are more low emission engines available on the market, and most fleets such as ours, we only invest in low engine emission vehicles. That's one of our main pieces of equipment that we're constantly reinvesting in. And these actually make a tangible impact on our GHG emissions. And yet at the same time, because people have that exposure to the exhaust and the size of the freight, they have this negative connotation with the industry because it's right there in their face.
Yeah, it's interesting how people kind of have that perspective on that. You know what I mean? Like it's, you have the driver, you know you need them, but they're not really thanking them. Like the thanking a driver just started this year. Right. It was a great
thank a trucker.
Yeah, think of trucker.
Yeah.
That should have happened a long time ago. And it's great that, you know, these programs are highlighting a lot of those challenges and issues that we're seeing. And we had this, I'm trying to bring it back to another thing, and we're talking about the trucks. I thought about the insurance guy that we talked to John a few months ago now. And a lot of the stigma I find too is because the accidents that happen, it usually involves the personal property.
Yeah.
You have that, you know, a family got hurt in an accident, even though it was their own fault. You know, you talk about a drunk driver hitting a truck, and just because the truck was, you know, his hours were off a little bit or something, it's the truck driver's fault. So there's a lot of that kind of stigma behind it. Education on drivers, how to drive around trucks, I think is a great point. I don't remember that being part of my education when I was driving. But it should be. You have 45,000 pounds of a truck barreling down. If you do something aggressive in front of them, it can pile up a lot of cars on the highway, and it has a deep, deep impact for a lot of different communities, right? So I think those are great points that you kind of point out. One thing I want to go back to a little bit earlier, you talked about the truck stops and facilities. We had a conversation last night with the Port of Authority of Windsor, and they're talking about the Gordie Howe Bridge, how they're thinking about building a giant industrial park for logistics, for truckers, for facilities like that, sort of like they do in the U.S. I know you mentioned there was the largest one, I think, in North America, was just outside of Saskatchewan, which we don't know about. Things like those types of scenarios, having driver facilities that are safer for them to go to, I think is very, very key. I don't think there's enough of highlight on that aspect. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's a key component for recruiting and retention of top talent, especially when it comes to the driver side. And if we want to attract different demographics, these are the changes that do have to happen. It's not just about the working conditions that an independent carrier is able to facilitate. There's all of the other stops along the road to reach the freight's destination that need to be accounted for. And we do have a driver shortage across North America and internationally as well. And for our company, we're really focused on three key demographics that we want to recruit, and that includes women, youth, and Aboriginals. And we're not going to be able to have a very successful recruitment plan if there aren't these kinds of changes where they're making amenities that are more, not even just pleasing, but more suitable for people who are going on the road. People have a certain expectation and a certain quality of life that they want to uphold, and that should absolutely extend to drivers, particularly because in a time like now, it's shown how essential we are. But a lot of it does come down to marketing. There's something that was said during the Women with Drive Leadership Summit this year by one of the keynote speakers that I found really interesting. And she mentioned how the marketing campaign for online shopping, where they mention free shipping, has a huge disservice to our industry. And I never thought about that, because it pretty much gives this label an association of free shipping, and it devalues the work that our entire industry does. And it doesn't just stop at the driver or at the dispatcher or the crane operator. It's basically just putting a blanket label over our entire industry that our efforts are free, which by no means are they. We're a single digit profit margin industry. Everything that we do has a massive price tag attached to it. And I don't think that a lot of people also have that awareness, how expensive it is to get an AZ license, how expensive it is to operate the equipment that we have, to own the land that we have, the insurance that goes with it, the fuel, the tires. I mean, it's a long, long list of responsibilities that, you know, every owner has at the company. And in order to grow, you have to continue to reinvest in the company. So that's why I think it's also really important for carriers such as ours that are kind of taking the next step and the ownership to introduce something like our annual AZ Female Scholarship, which we just introduced this year. That way we can cover the costs of a full commercial license at Chet and help attract this one of the key demographics that we want to include in freight transportation.
So then I was thinking, so how does a startup carrier, brand new carrier, kind of start off his organization, his company, so that he's planting the right seeds so that he grows in a way that, you know, we envision how we talk about these companies to be in the next 5 to 10 years, right? So a lot of the stuff, like a lot of the companies now, they're kind of ingrained in their ways. They're kind of, it's hard to change certain things. It's cemented, right? Whereas the new companies that are starting up and growing, they have a bit more agile and can accommodate for, you know, all these new programs and initiatives being implemented, right?
Yeah, I think it also has a lot to do with the new generation coming in. And I do think that there is a lot of power in a company that has longevity. We've seen also through the pandemic, a lot of small to medium sized carriers have had to close their doors because of the costs of associated with operating, especially when it comes to lease. I think a big asset is when you're a value asset-based carrier, just like ours, and you own the land that you operate out of, and you're able to expand a little bit more easily. I do think new companies can have a new mindset, but it's not impossible to create change in large companies as well. It depends on the people that are in charge making decisions, and also the people who are challenging the existing agenda to introduce change.
I want to bring it back a little bit to what you talked about earlier. The challenge, and I'll bring the perspective of Cargill County into it, just because obviously we're a little bit connected to them. Our biggest challenge is our demographic, our average demographic, I don't know if you know this, is 28 years old. Our drivers, our average driver age is 28 years old. So we have a lot of youth that drive for us. Our biggest challenge is attracting women drivers come work for us and different and maybe different ethnicities and different groups, because we have a very specific model the way we do it. We've attracted, we've grown that way. Once you get to a certain size, you know you have to do things differently, right? My best example that I'll put up is, you know, Bison Transport. They have a great program where they have Austrian drivers. They have an embassy, a consulate in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. And they bring in German drivers from Europe as part of their program to help newcomers established. They push a very much women drivers. They help recruit internationally from countries that have strong partnerships and ties to Canada, like New Zealand, like Australia, and that's how they're kind of approaching the topic, which it doesn't get highlighted enough. Even companies like ours, you know, us having a 28-year average driver, I think it's phenomenal. Like, the medium age in our industry is 48 years old as a driver. That's fantastic. One of the guys, Jag, I think he started when he was like 17, 18 years old when he had his first truck. Mm-hmm. And he's running it, and now he has 5 or 6 trucks of his own because he sees the value in it and he has the lifestyle that he wants. And it's interesting how there's different challenges for different groups and how they approach it.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of opportunity. I think the larger the carrier they are, such as Bison Transport, it's a lot easier to bring in immigrant workers, and because you do have to sponsor them and there has to be that kind of level of trust also. So if they're working with a chamber, I think that's great. I think that's the way to go. But that's not something that a small to medium-sized carrier, they're not really able to also put up that money up front. Again, it really does come down to all of the other costs that you have. So I think that's one of the things that limits us as an industry as well. So we can't necessarily evolve as quickly as other industries do because of the fact that we have all of these other expenditures and we're very vulnerable to external factors as well. So if there's horrible storms and equipment is damaged, or there are accidents or incidents, there's a wide range of things that can happen, including new regulations, a carbon tax. I mean, there really is no end to surprises that can happen. And I do think that that puts us in a position where we're always going to be reactionary, even if there is a dedicated division or department working on proactive approaches. You can easily get sidelined due to the external factors that do come up. But I think it's important as an industry that we do focus on what kind of changes can we make as a sector to help attract demographics that weren't originally interested in driving. And I think youth is starting to become more interested in trucking because there is that kind of lifestyle where you're on the road, you don't technically have a boss. I mean, you obviously still have a boss and you have a supervisor to report to, but you don't have that feeling that, you know, they're hovering over your backside or looking into your computer to see what you're doing. You're out on the road and you're also trusted with this heavy equipment. So I think that there's a lot of responsibility that goes with that, but it also gives you a lot of authority over what you're doing on a daily basis. And I think that can really appeal to certain people who don't want that 9-to-5 work from home life right now or in the office in the near future. But I do think that lobby groups such as Women's Trucking Federation of Canada or the TTSAO or any blocks like that, I would really encourage fleets to join whichever one speaks to their interests more. Because if we do want to make changes such as rest stops or anything along the way that has to do with infrastructure, you really do need a bigger voice than just the single carrier or the few that you're able to round up. And we are a very competitive industry. There's no way to kind of go about it. Obviously, we're going to be incredibly competitive and vying for the same customers. So if you're able to join any kind of organization where you're able to have a neutral ground to address these issues that you share, then we can become much stronger and actually alleviate some of the obstacles that exist for us to recruit top talent.
So then do we kind of get the government to, I guess maybe from your branding and marketing experience, do we start getting the government to kind of getting them to market it or kind of brand awareness around trucking and logistics? Or is it kind of these organizations come together and we start kind of hounding and promoting it ourselves so that we can recruit and share the experiences we have in the industry?
So I really think it has to be on all fronts. I mean, Trucking HR Canada does an amazing job in advertising that women should be involved. There are Women with Drive Leadership Summit. It started in 2016. It's become incredibly popular. It's an amazing event. They always have great speakers. This year, obviously, it was virtual, but they still did a great job. And they share a lot of data and statistics that help support why you should consider women into driving positions and promote within as well, because there's a lot of opportunities within transportation. It doesn't just have to be a driver role. We do have more women inclined to work in the office and work as dispatchers or in logistics. So for now, we are focusing a lot more on female drivers because we have had a lot of success with our recruitment for the in-office. So we actually experienced an increase in promotions and recruiting for executive roles, supervisor roles, and operations. So we've been able to kind of turn back and focus in on the drivers so we can get them into the cabin on the road. But a lot of our management, and I think you would say it's the same for your company, but most people in trucking, whoever's at the top started as a driver or a mechanic or someone that was in the more trade section of the business, and they were able to get promoted within and get into other areas. So I think that getting a commercial license is an excellent way to get into a career that could really provide for you for the rest of your life. And it could as a driver, or it could within operations. You have a lot of opportunities within trucking in general.
I think earlier on you identified, I was thinking about it, I was holding my tongue, but you identify that perfect young driver, I'd say a hipster trucker. You know, a guy that wants to be, he's on the road, he's kind of relaxed.
Traveling.
He's traveling, you know, give me a load to California, I'll stay there for 3-4 days. Give me a load back, and I can see the appeal there for sure. I really want to kind of not stray too much away from it, but I want to focus a lot more about, you know, how do we get more women involved in our industry? Because we had Paula, and that's how originally the conversation started. One of our second or third podcasts, Paula was on, and we're talking about sales. We at the end of the conversation, I asked her, you know, how has it been being a woman in the industry? And she messaged me after, and she goes, we didn't spend enough time talking about that.
Yeah.
We should really focus. And that's how we got Jennifer involved. And then we talked a little bit about it again. And that's why we always want to, we'd love to have more people, more diversity on our shows. And I'm glad you joined us. But how do we get more, not just women, but maybe university graduates? Because that's, I think, the hardest demographic. Because university male graduates have an easier time joining. They'll get into a truck, they'll do that. But you don't see that many young women getting into the industry. I don't think there's enough exposure to it. What can we do as a group to show that more exposure? How do we go around and show that this is a fun, it is stressful, but there's a lot of fun. There's a lot.
You're never bored. You're never bored. No. Well, I think there's a lot that we can do, but there are some hindrances right now due to the pandemic. So prior to the pandemic, we were discussing a lot in the industry about how actually having face with high schools and universities going to those career fairs that they have, it's actually incredibly important. When I was growing up, it was definitely never at my high school. It was never at my university. But there are a lot of programs right now. So we are affiliated with the Peel Goods Movement Task Force, and they created the Smart Freight Center. And the Smart Freight Center is made up of three universities. It's York University, U of T, and McMaster. So they're doing a lot of work on actually not just elevating the industry, but research into what kind of infrastructure changes have to happen. There's a wide array of issues that they're covering, and they do have, each of those schools have a program that's dedicated to transportation and logistics. So there's definitely people who are currently in those programs, but I also don't think that most carriers are recruiting that type of talent. And that's where I think there's this disconnect between academia and carriers. Because there was a certain way, especially in the 80s and 90s, and I would say that was really the boom for trucking when a lot of the carriers that are here today were established. And it was very different back then. You know, you had a trades background, you didn't necessarily go to university, or if you did, you were in university in your home country, you're an immigrant now, you're starting with a commercial license, or you're starting as a technician. And I mean, they all kind of started the companies those ways. And there's a lot of people in middle management who don't necessarily have a background in university either, but yet they're incredibly successful in their positions. So because it's been done a certain way for so many years, that I don't think they're looking to recruit undergrads or master's students who are actually studying our industry, which I think is a disadvantage. They have a lot of knowledge and it's great intellectual capital that we should be tapping into. I think there's hesitation with the idea that someone with a degree is going to cost more. And again, everything does kind of trickle back to costs for a carrier. But I think there's a lot of ways that you can get students in the door and you'd be able to see whether or not it is a good fit. So we did partner up with UTM and we did a job shadow program. So that was a good way to kind of introduce our carrier to employing more students with undergraduate degrees and going down that route. So I think it's really about the onus of the carriers, as well as the industry, where they want to involve themselves with academia and make themselves known that this is an industry that you can have a very fruitful career. And then it's also up to us to actually hire those people once they've graduated and are interested in employment.
Yeah, I've noticed in the last little bit, because I've been looking at masters, that masters of logistics is becoming far more popular of a degree for people to kind of grab onto and take on. If you want to go work at a Walmart or Navy's in their supply chain, you need to have that. We don't have that enough on the trucking side. It's more on the vendor side. Yeah. And less than the trucking side. And the other thing I find very interesting is the and you touched upon it, and it's the European model. Is everybody I talked to in Europe back then, and they talk about, they go to school to do logistics. Like if you're in Germany, you go to a specific school to learn the logistics. You don't just get thrown in the workplace. Everybody I've talked to that works logistics and trucking here in Canada is like,
I don't know how I got in.
You have a bachelor of kinesiology.
Yeah.
I have a bachelor of political science.
So do I.
I didn't intend to, but I love the industry. I'm glad I got into it. It fed what I was kind of looking for. But Europe does it so differently than we do it here. We had Gary Newberry not long ago, and he was talking about how it's English from England, his perspective on it. And he talked about how it's more of that educational process in Europe, and here it's more of that, oh, you need a job? Here you go, figure it out. Okay, this guy knows what he's doing. He's not sinking, but he can promote him, right? And it's challenging. Training people very challenging, right? And I think that's a lot of the reason, too, that you have a lot of students and a lot of people that, you know, push back. We have Sheridan College, teamed up with too as well to get some interest and involved, but you don't get enough of those schools kind of reaching out to us. The only reason I think it's becoming more common now is because, like you said, COVID, you know, there's a lot more, a lot less jobs out there. And what's the industry that's booming? Now all the universities went, well, logistics. We didn't know you needed education on this. What's going on? How do we get involved now?
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's a great point that you kind of touched upon there.
Yeah, I think like right now there's so much awareness about our industry that we should be pushing for even more media exposure so that we can educate the public, we can educate different universities and inform them that, you know, we're not going anywhere. Even if the craziest kind of change happened following the pandemic where everyone starts manufacturing local, and there's obviously a push for that, for countries to become a little bit more self-sustainable due to the fact that the supply chain did more or less fail when the pandemic hit, and it's still kind of struggling to go back to what it was prior to. And worst case scenario, even if that changes dramatically following, everything will still be delivered by truck, no matter what. I mean, there might be some impact on shipping, maybe rail, though rail I still don't think is going anywhere, and maybe air. Those areas, I think, have an opportunity for some change. But when it comes to anything that's being moved within a large country like Canada, even if we do become self-sufficient, we would need trucks and we would need the rail. There's no way that we're going to be moving goods within Canada without these two very critical elements of the supply chain. So I think that's something that we should really focus on. And aside from that, even the driver role, I know that there's been a lot of talk about how women have been hard hit by the pandemic, and most of them are the ones that have been experiencing job loss. And if they're re-entering the market, I think that they should absolutely consider getting a commercial license. It's such an excellent opportunity. You know that your job will never be in a position where you won't have work. There's peaks and lows like there is with anything tied to deliveries, but something that we also advocate for at our school and at Musket is to make yourself a hybrid driver. Take on any opportunity to learn how to move a new piece of equipment, be flexible. So for example, in our carrier, we do have a container division and a trailer division. Certain carriers have trailers only or containers only. But wherever you end up employed, if you have any opportunity to learn something additional, always take that chance. Because the more skills that you have as a driver, the more income you'll make. It's just that simple. It's really up to you how you schedule your life and how much you want to earn. So particularly from a female point of view, if you're working and so is your partner, then you could really kind of schedule your life around the fact that if you are becoming a parent or are parents, so depending on when there's a low or there's a peak, or if you want to continue working throughout, you are able to do that. As long as you communicate with your dispatcher, your supervisor, and your driver management team, like you can really decide how you're going to be working. And I think that's the beauty of being a driver. But again, it really does have to kind of come down to a lifestyle preference. Are you a good driver? Are you interested in being responsible for heavy equipment? We have a program where anyone who's interested, obviously this has become not the easiest to facilitate during a pandemic as well, but we have very expensive and realistic simulators at our school. So we have full truck simulators as well as VR systems. And this is a great way for someone who's maybe considering it, but on the fence, they're not sure how they would feel. This is a great way for them to come in, become familiar with our facilities, get a chance to see what it would be like to operate that kind of machinery, even step inside a cab. And that's something that I think once we're able to, post-pandemic, or at least when it's safer to have more of those neighborhood-like events where people who are on the fence or thinking about a second career could come in and actually interact with the equipment. Because I think most people are drawn towards large equipment, especially when it's in a safe and inviting space and not on a highway. I think people then are extremely interested. And when the equipment is washed and it looks beautiful, it's very inviting and exciting. I mean, there's a reason why kids are so drawn to it too, right? Like, absolutely. They want the honk. They want to get in. They want to see even a crane moving around containers. These are things that are very exciting, but they're behind closed doors in our industry because of safety measures, which absolutely should be there. But we should create public community touch points where they're able to interact with that side of our business. So for right now, with my team, we're mostly focusing on how can we capture a lot of photography and video to showcase that side, what's going on behind those closed doors, the skill that's involved, and also the beauty that there is in heavy equipment. I think that a lot of people don't necessarily make that connection, and we have to do our best to show that right now.
Yeah, I think the last point that you made is very interesting. So some of the best pictures I've seen of Canada has been by drivers. They get to see some of the most unique areas where, you know, they're on the prairies. We have a picture of the truck and you see the prairies and the sunset in the background. You're going, wow, that's beautiful. But you got a guy in the mountain and he's, you know, he stopped and took a picture of the trucks and you see the Rockies there. Or out in, you know, St. John's and he's delivering all the beautiful houses, the blue and the red. And there's beauty to it, right? And
you're absolutely
on that one. One thing I wanted to ask, and something that was brought up in one of our previous podcasts, I think it was Jennifer that talked about it, was the challenge for women into the industry is the burden, and I say burden because that's what it is, of children falls usually on the woman. And usually it's single moms that have the hardest time finding a job. So one of the hardest things in trucking is that you have an 11-hour driving day minimum, if not 13 hours. How do you juggle that?
So it depends so much on the individual circumstance, and it also depends on where you're coming from. So for example, our private career college, Chet, is working on this special project with the Immigrants Working Center out of Hamilton. And in order to help encourage women into this opportunity where it's a funded program as well. So the AZ license training is covered, but they also provide additional training for English because a lot of the immigrants are obviously ESL. So they provide that component, and they also provide a component for childcare. And I think that is something really, really outstanding. And I think it's more about those organizations that do exist and they do provide these kinds of assistance for mothers, especially single mothers. So there are a lot of government opportunities where you can tap into either funding for the childcare, or you can go through, I mean, obviously not every single mother is going to be an immigrant and therefore able to go through the Immigrants Working Center, for example. But municipalities, we do a lot of funded programs with them as well. And it all depends on which program you're going through, but I would recommend that. So if someone was asking me, how do we tap into that single mother market, or how do we help solve the problem for a single mother who is interested in driving? There are these established programs. So as opposed to trying to create something new, there's something that you can apply for. And, you know, if a carrier also wants to become a leader in this space, then, you know, why don't you offer that you cover childcare fee? I mean, I think that that's something that's starting to become a part of the conversation, and it's not just for drivers. It's about also extending childcare fees for people in logistics, a dispatcher. I mean, there's women in all different positions. You're basically right now guaranteed 12 months or 18 months for maternity leave with the government, depending on which one you opt for. But obviously at the end of 12 months or 18 months, you still require that childcare. So I think if you really want to become a leader in this space, then that's something that the carrier or school or anyone in an employer position should consider.
And I think, and I'm sorry, TP, I know you probably have something to say, but I love this topic. I think that it's funny too, because trucking is, every company I've worked for, every one I've been associated with or I've known, trucking is such a family unit too. Like everybody, it's like a very family-oriented piece. To me, that just makes logical sense that if we're already a family, we're already so close-knit, you know, your aunts and uncles are already working probably part of the company. You can have, like you said, a childcare facility within the facility, or, you know, have a designated area that, you know, I don't call it co-parenting, but something to help facilitate. I think that's a great idea. I never thought about it that way. And I think it would encourage a lot more people to come and join the logistics, because they know, hey, I know that person. I know that person's mom. She's the one taking care of my kids. I know they're going to be well fed. I know they're very close by. And if we're part of that whole family, it would get them more engaged and be less like, oh, I need to go because I need to go pick up my kid. And we got the supervisor going, come on, we got loads to cover. We got two
more deliveries to go.
Yeah. And it becomes a trade-off, because it's the urgency of your child, which you absolutely need to take care of first. But there's also that work kind of balance. So I wanted to make that point.
That's a very crucial point, man. I guess the question I had, I don't know if this stat would be measured, I guess, across Canada or even provincially, how does each province measure up in terms of, I guess, recruiting that diverse employee, in terms of whether that is, you know, men versus women, or, you know, different ethnicities? We know which kind of provinces rank in the better end, which kind of province are lacking, and, you know, what makes the ones that are top, what are they doing right that the bottom tier can kind of implement and follow with?
Well, I know that overall, we are lagging across the country. We have the lowest amount of women in driver roles. There's been an increase in women in other parts of transportation and logistics, but in driver roles, I think it's something really low, like 3%.
Is that versus like other countries in the world, or?
That's with Trucking HR Canada. I think it's versus the international plane. So there is definitely a little bit more in Europe, where they have a lot more programs that attract women, not just for driver roles, but trades in general. But I would say that in Canada specifically, out of the trades, we also have a lot of competition. So trucking is also kind of vying for similar candidates who would be interested in trades, but construction sometimes have better benefits, better pay. It's a different structure as well. So we're competing with other trades as well that I would say have been better in recruiting women because of the nature of the work as well. So that's why I do think the kind of childcare avenue would probably be the most successful for trucking. We are family-oriented companies. Pretty much every trucking company I know is either family-owned or there's multiple generations working together. I mean, we have multiple generations working with each other, which I think is great. I mean, there's a father with like three different sons who are working all as mechanics, and there's a family that work at the container depot. One of them, it's actually him and his wife both work there, and their youngest son was at South Dump, also obviously pre-pandemic, but the smallest and cutest little helper. He even had a safety vest that on the back said Daddy's Little Helper. the cutest thing. So, you know, there really is this family-friendly atmosphere within a trucking company. So I don't see why you wouldn't necessarily float that kind of opportunity where you would be able to not just recruit more women, but I think also more men. More and more men are taking on the roles where they are becoming active parents as well. You know, it's not just babysitting, they're an active parent. So I think that's kind of the next step. I think generationally, that's what we're looking for as youth that are going into an industry. We're looking for that work-life balance. And a big part of work-life balance for certain people, if they have a family, is just that, how will I be able to support my family while I'm out on the road? So I think it's something that we will still probably not see for a while, again, just because of the cost associated with childcare. And that's the one real negative I would say we have in Ontario over other provinces. So within trucking, I would say we're kind of similar across the board. I think Ontario is a leader when it comes to safety and lobbying for better regulations for the industry, but we're definitely behind when it comes to childcare. We're by far one of the most expensive provinces. And when we look even more local with the GTA and Peel region, even more expensive. We're incredibly expensive, and there's very limited subsidies attached to childcare. And I think that's something that the pandemic also kind of kicked up, the fact that people are expected to be working even if they're working from home, but schools are closed. So we're not even talking about daycare. We're talking about kids that require a lot of attention, and there could be multiple if you know you're not just dealing with one child. So I think that's something that the pandemic has really changed as well. And I hope that not just carriers, but other employers will also look to how they can solve that gap. Because unfortunately, it has to be all three sectors working together. It can't just all be put onto the public sector or the private sector or the nonprofit. It really has to be something that all three work together in order to solve. And that way we could actually move forward and either transition into a new form of work or transition into a new form of childcare.
Interesting. I'm gonna do some more research on that.
No, and I think you're touching upon a lot of the great things that we should be more focused on. And how we're competitively, like you said, Europe is far, far further ahead on that whole aspect of helping and encouraging in that development. Another I find an interesting trend here in Canada is the change from the pressure from a rate per mile for a driver more to an hourly, where they can have that different lifestyle where you don't have to work that full day. You can take that 8 hour. I think that's another positive trend that's going to help attract a lot more people into the truck, and especially, you know, women, when they can go, I can take an 8 hour day off, so make a pretty good living off of it, and then the truck can still do a slip seat scenario with another driver and have someone else come in and work nights or whatever have you. So I'm glad there's a lot of different changes in the industry that's pushing and promoting ways to make life easier and have more people involved in there, for sure.
Yeah, that's a good take on it. I guess it's just interesting to see, like, touch based on what Sophia said back again, looking at my days when I was doing like career fairs and stuff, there was no like recognition of our industry at all. There's the insurance industry, there's like the banking. What else is there, like the typical, you know, going into IT and stuff, but there's like nothing logistics oriented at all. None of the fairs, even like the private fairs I went to, even like not even the ones that I arranged at schools, there's still nothing there. I didn't really go into any trades job fairs or job shows, so maybe over there they had some logistics or transportation, but I highly even doubt that, right? So but it's not even the fact that maybe I might have been looking for a job in logistics, but just kind of going by
exposure, going by
the table, it's kind of raises a I never really thought about it, but let me look into this. And it's just that I talked to a buddy, maybe he finds it interesting, and it kind of goes from there, right? So
yeah, I think even my own experience, and I'm glad you brought that up, is like I remember I was doing logistics overseas. I came back, I couldn't really find anything. I decided to be maybe a police officer. I was doing police officer fairs, and I couldn't really land on something that was trying to get done. I remember being at the fair, and then I remember seeing, at the time it was Bison Transport, I'm going, transport logistics, maybe something will happen. I go talk to the recruiter there at the time, which was Grant Nazan, and he became my boss after. And, you know, he kind of looked at my experience and went, well, you worked overseas, but you're a young guy, you seem like you got a hustle. And I'm like, well, it's a trucking company. He goes, there's a lot more to trucking. And because he was a younger guy and he had that energy,
yeah,
he kind of made me going, well, maybe there's more to this. You know, I fell in love with it after that, you know, after some long, grueling hours and good mentorship from Grant. And I know he watches it once in a while, so I'll make sure I tag him this time. But it takes, I think, that exposure, people talk about it and not say it in a kind of like, oh, I do logistics. You got to be excited and passionate about it, right? And I don't think enough people drive that passion because they have that stigma in their mind that it's not cool. It is very cool. Like, one of the challenges that we're facing is it's produce season. There's product coming out of different regions. If we don't deliver that product, literally in a week's time, my family won't be able to eat those strawberries.
Yeah.
So that is a huge impact that we're having on those decisions. You know, if I don't deliver that paper to that mill, they won't be able to create that toilet paper, or they won't be able to create the paper that my kids are writing on to do schoolwork, or, you know, I don't deliver the iPads in time, so my kid can't get that gift. It is that impactful, and people don't talk about it. They're like, yeah, I just do trucking. You gotta get a little bit more excited about it, right? Like, it's phenomenal. And you said it great. Like, the kid with the vest on, I bring my kids whenever I can to see the trucks going down the road. You do the old school.
Yeah.
They get all excited. You gotta get that excitement back into it. And I think the same way we got get women more excited into it as well. Even we even touched upon mechanics. Like, there's not enough women mechanics out there. And I know I talk to a lot of friends of mine, we women, that talk about how they love working on big machinery. I'm like, really? They're like, yeah, it's so much fun. I'm like, I never thought about it that way, right? I don't find it interesting, but they have such passion for it. But we don't say, you know, hey, won't you go work on the truck? Because it's really, really neat and fun. There's not enough of that exposure on that, right?
Yeah, well, I think, again, it kind of comes down to the educational component that we do really have to get out there to the public and find these different touch points where we can educate them on the opportunities. I do think that whether it comes to truck mechanics, it's a little bit more difficult. We did have one female truck mechanic before, but she was also a bodybuilder. So she could really do the work. So you are carrying a lot more heavy equipment as a truck mechanic versus a truck driver. Mm-hmm. As a truck driver, you're not really responsible for unloading or loading the freight yourself. But as a truck mechanic, there's a lot of heavy, heavy equipment that you would be expected to be able to manipulate yourself. Doesn't mean that a woman can't do it. It just means that in that position, you do need somewhat of a particular physical type to do the job. So that's just also kind of has to come into play when you are educating people about different job opportunities. But when it goes back to how we do have very meaningful and purposeful work, I think that's something that we also need to expose more. The fact that just-in-time deliveries and you're ordering everything online and you get it the next day isn't also tied to the fact that it came through a truck is a big disconnect. But I think it's also our onus as a private sector that we also have to have a sustainable model and give back to the community too. We should be community leaders and we should be going and addressing the topics that are relevant to us. So something that's very close to us and the industry is human trafficking. It's something that is not often talked about. It's starting to get a lot more attention, but Ontario is an unfortunate hub for human trafficking. And it's something that truck drivers are in a particular position to recognize, spot, and report. So we're actually working with Truckers Against Trafficking, which is an amazing organization out of the States. They are now in Canada as well, and they are working with several other carriers and schools like ours, where we are providing training for our graduates and our licensed drivers as well. And it's something so quick. It's a 26-minute video that they have. You watch it and they basically run you through all of the steps and what to look out for. How do you report it? Once you've watched the video, you get a certificate and a wallet card with the numbers for who do you connect with 24/7, whether you're in Canada, US, or Mexico, in order to report human trafficking. And it has such a big impact because truck drivers are really along those stop points where they're able to actually witness this happening. And just by a quick video, they'd be able to recognize what is happening before them and how to report it. And that's something that I think is really critical. And there's so many other issues as well that any carrier and any private sector could bring into the framework of their company. And then I think it makes people and employees feel more excited about coming to work, because now they're also working for something that goes beyond just profit and just beyond working and doing their daily tasks, because obviously everything can always become overwhelming, especially during a pandemic when everything we're doing is incredibly critical. And it shouldn't be seen that you're adding something additional onto the plate. It's something that gives that meaning to the day, that you're working on a special project that's tied to the community and you can help alleviate someone else's pain. And I think that's something that's incredibly important.
I love that. I think that's phenomenal call out, Sophia. I mean, you know, and you're right, and I'm glad you brought that up, like that whole human trafficking aspect of it. Not only are drivers the ones that A, would be most likely ones to see it or witness it, they're also the ones that are being exploited to help move it across or do something that's allowed, where, you know, one driver might see another driver and he's being very stressed or something's going on. They might be able to pick up on those signals that you're talking about. Or I don't know if lately I've noticed on YouTube videos, the new signal that if a kid or someone thinks it like this, it means they're in trouble and in distress, they can't say. You haven't seen those?
No.
I guess because I have kids, it comes up on YouTube. But there's like these new like ways for people, because like, how do you get someone's attention without you getting like hurt
yourself? Yeah.
And so there's the... But then, you know, the person might do something that jeopardizes you. But these are, you know, fantastic things that we should, as a society, help eliminate. Because there should be no human trafficking in North America. Like, there really shouldn't. There should be no human trafficking in Europe. And it's just as bad in Europe as well. It's something that is, I think, it's a stain on our society that we should really kind of help eliminate. So if everybody that's listening to it, I would obviously tell them to go to the human trafficking. We'll post it on the link, and at least through the course, be able to put it within your workday and able to talk about it. Because our drivers are in the truck stops, they're seeing all these people, they're in these all these areas, they're the fastest way of communication. I think that's fantastic. You know, I couldn't agree more with that.
Those are all good points raised.
Right?
Yeah.
You probably know those statistics better than I do, Sophia, but I can imagine the amount of just children alone that are human, like not even women being exploited, but, you know, even migrant workers. And
yeah. Well, the average age, I mean, they're children. It's from age 9 to 13 that those are the bulk of individuals that are being trafficked. And within Ontario, you would be surprised that a lot of the people who are also being trafficked, they're not immigrants. A lot of them tend to be Aboriginals, but we also have a lot of stories that it's people out of the suburbs. Recently, there was a Toronto Life, I believe, published a story about a victim that got into human trafficking when she was 15 years old, living out of Oakville. You know, suburb, had three older siblings, parents together. There was no, you know, tragic, sad story of her childhood that led to this circumstance. And I think that's also something that a lot of people aren't aware about, that there are a lot of people who are vulnerable to human trafficking. And, you know, just educating the people from our sector, I think, is something that is our responsibility. And the more people that we can get involved, the better. And I think that's also something that really helps with that female agenda for anyone who really wants to recruit more women, is to look into the issues that are close to them and affect them. And that way you can also come off as a leader. And there are a lot of practices that are already established. You don't have to go out there and reinvent the wheel. So for example, with us, we became really close with UN Women. They have so many programs, and that includes the Women Empowerment Principles. And that's called, in short, WEPS. And any company can go onto their website, and if the CEO and president signs a commitment to this, you are a part of their program and you can learn more about what you can do to actually elevate women within the workplace. And I think that's something that's already in existence, and it's a fantastic program. We recently were actually featured due to our case study and how we successfully were able to promote women within the industry. And like I said, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. There's so many programs that are out there. There are a lot of organizations that exist that are tailored to the trucking industry as well. And I just think it takes a little bit of research, and you can can figure out what your key demographic is and you can tailor your marketing campaigns towards that. For us, it's really important to shoot our real employees, obviously with their consent, and to have it gender balanced. So it's not about only featuring women, it's about featuring men and women working together, because that's the reality of the job. It's always going to be both genders at play, and you want to ensure that that is what you're advertising and that's what you're showing. It's always going to have an impact on someone if they see themselves in the promotional material. That's something that I think will always be key. So even something as minor as updating your own social media platform and actually getting real stories from the people who work for you with their consent is something that can also really help shape and inform people who are interested in looking for something new. And this is the perfect opportunity. The pandemic shook everything up. People are looking for new jobs and they're looking for new lifestyles. So why not expose our industry for the greatness that it is?
Absolutely. I think I need a new co-host now. Yeah. You can get more, a better opinion, just not just me and KP. Now I feel bad. One other thing I wanted to kind of ask, and we touched upon before, with Paul or even forget who, was how do we get women involved in the industry where it's known for that macho, sexist aspect to it? And I remember asking Paul, I have had conversations with Paul outside of it, and I know she's okay with me talking about it, but like, she's been in the industry for such a long time. And I asked her, like, you know, back in the day when you started, like, how bad was it? She goes, Matt, it was brutal back in the day. Like, you got treated like it's like, well, what's a woman doing here, coming in here, talking to us? What do you know about this? How do we, and it's not so prevalent now, but I'm sure it is, because I can't speak to it, because I don't see it myself. Maybe you can kind of tell me more about it from your perspective. How do we, eliminate that, or how do we, I know it's more of a management drawing the line and saying we're not accepting this kind of conversation, but how do we get out of that kind of mentality where there's this stigma in our industry for being sexist?
Well, I think it really comes down to your personality type, like as a female as well. So I was drawn to the industry because I get along more with men. I enjoy working with men. Not to say I don't enjoy it with females, but I was always drawn towards that macho industry, so towards heavy equipment. And because I am an aesthetics based person, I've always kind of had this obsession of how can I capture this as something beautiful, because it is, and how can I share that this is a family oriented company and business and industry when most people don't think it is. So if you're into something that is challenging and ever changing, then this is absolutely the industry for you. And I think that you could experience sexism in any industry you work in, truly. I worked in the nightclub industry prior to going into transportation, and lots of people would have said that that's where you can experience a lot of sexism. And personally, I never did. I was always supported by my manager and by my boss. It was probably one of the best working relationships and environments I had actually been in. And it was predominantly thanks to my male coworkers. And I would say it's very similar to transportation as well. It really just depends on who you're working with, as opposed to the gender that you're working with, because people can be unpleasant and have their own unconscious bias, regardless of what their race or gender is. I do think that in transportation, the more women that are at the table, the better it will be. Because even for myself, I mean, it's great to have Paula there. We always like to get together and have a chat about what's going on in the company. And even though we work in different departments, a lot of we have very similar experiences, and it just helps to have at least one person that can at least see it from your point of view. We're both mothers, we're both female. We have kind of different sets of priorities sometimes from our male coworkers. And it does help to have someone there that you can have that conversation with. So I think that's the main way that you can change the industry, is just to involve more women. I mean, we did this amazing company success story on Brandy. She was one of our employees, but right now she's actually a vendor. because she started as a commercial driver. She has all of her licenses. I mean, she can even operate a crane. She's amazing. Like, I don't know how she's able to do all of it. She's actually superwoman. I mean, I love women in these roles. I love watching it. I wouldn't personally be able to manipulate that heavy equipment myself. I just don't have that level of trust in myself to do so. But she does, and she does it so well. And she's also a woman that has a slim physique, so you wouldn't necessarily, you know, stereotype her to do that type of job. And she does it so well, so professionally, that our fleet resources manager actually helped her set up her own business so that she could be a vendor for our company. And the relationship has worked so well. And one of the things she said in her interview for us was, because she was a woman, and she's also a woman that's doing the type of job where predominantly everyone is male, is that as long as you show up and you do the job and you do it well, there's really nothing that could be said about it, because you're there and you're performing, and that's kind of the end of the subject. And that's going to be true within an office job as well. As long as you show up and you do the work, then even if anyone makes any sort of snide remarks about your gender or your position in life, you know, there's so many things that people could try to pick apart from you as an individual. But that's going to be true for pretty much everyone's situation. You just have to rise above it and show up and do the work.
You're absolutely right. I like one of the stories that we had from when Transcript was talking. He was talking about an area that a driver was delivering. It was a woman driver. And then she pulls up. And the other driver in the lineup, between two trucks, she had the blind side in. The other driver goes, "Hey, darling, you want me to get out and help you? Because it's a really hard, you know, back in here." She goes, "Watch this." She pulls in. She does whatever she needs to do. Blind side's in. Beautiful, right in one shot. The guy comes out. He goes, "Lady, I need to shake your hand. In my 30 years I've been here, never seen one time has anyone been able to accomplish that in one hit." And he goes, "I'm sorry that I even offered." He goes, "I underestimated you. You did a fantastic job." And it highlights how everybody's capable. It doesn't, like, you're right. Like, I love how you're kind of in the, like, you're not saying man or woman, just everybody's capable of it.
Yeah.
You just gotta have the heart for it and just the want for it. And then we just have to be inclusive as an industry to kind of attract those kind of people where they have the heart and be inclusive and don't hire because, it's a woman or a man, or it's a this race or that race. Look at the qualifications, look at how they fit, and give them an equal opportunity. I think part of the, and we won't have time to touch upon it, but part of the program is the way we interview people as well. It's a picture, it's a name, it's you don't even look at the qualifications first. You go on their LinkedIn, I look at the picture, you look at all their information, you already made a judgment. Everybody, because it's inherently, you just do it. If it would be a lot more interesting if you didn't have the name, you didn't have the picture, you just had the person's qualifications.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You just look at that and go, this person sounds interesting, and look at the accomplishments they've had. And then when they walk in, you're pleasantly surprised of whomever they are, because you haven't had that preconceived notion. And I've done it, and those mistakes as a hiring manager. I know people have done it. It's just something inherently in us that we just judge someone when we look at them. We go, I don't know, they don't have the right look to that, right? I think that's a lot of the problem as well in our industry. We look for the right look of somebody, that they're tough or they're whatever. It just doesn't always facilitate that way. Some of the best people, like you said, a fit young girl mechanic. You had a lady, a great crane operator. We had a driver that's great for backing up.
Yeah.
You know, I know some great managers that were, you know, experts. Some of the best managers I worked with were women. And men at the same time do the same thing, and just the way they operate, it really needs to be more of a focus rather than what they look like and how they go about it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, in the perfect world, everything would be a meritocracy, but, you know, we're all humans and we all have our unconscious biases. I mean, even once, as just an experiment, the VP of IT and I, we specifically were trying to recruit women into our departments. And it was incredibly difficult. Neither of us were able to employ a female because we just didn't have female applicants. We had very few, and even if we were able to interview them or reach out to them, they would have chosen another employer, because we still have that trucking stigma. I mean, I'm marketing, he's IT, you're not going to be a driver, but because, you know, we're in a yard, we're maybe not the most brand new facility, even though we have expanded and we're in a new terminal too with the warehouse, we're still working in an area where there's so many marketing jobs and there's so many jobs in IT. So if you want to work in a nice office, or right now, I guess everyone's still working from home, but they still can have that prestige of working for the banking company or someone else that is well-recognized, and they can kind of have bragging rights about that job, because we do live in a capitalistic society. And I think that bragging rights are really associated with the kind of job that you have. And because a lot of people don't understand logistics and they don't understand transportation and they don't necessarily connect to the fact that we support everything and we're part of the supply chain, that it's just not attractive enough to get those female candidates. So that's something that I think we all have to work more towards. And a lot of the opportunities we have are very interesting. So we just have to do the best we can, especially with the pandemic in mind. But as soon as that cloud lifts and we're able to have more physical touch points with the public, I think the next best thing is to do as many neighborhood-like community-based events to actually get that touch point, to get our equipment out there for people to safely come in and out of, to watch and learn more about the industry. That's something that I would really envision doing for our company as well, is how can we kind of set up an information booth? So before they even have to really walk through the front of the office or go into the back of the yard, how could they come in and interact with our physical space from a safe location, obviously, and learn more about the industry and have some touch points and have the ability to talk to a person face to face again, you know, post pandemic, and learn more. Because I think that you can really share, just like your recruiter, your boss made such an impact on you just from talking face to face and explain, like, it is not just trucking, like there's so much to it. And I think every person, every recruiter out of a company can make that kind of impact. And it's just about setting that as a priority to go out and have those face to face moments once we're able to. And in lieu of that, what can we do on a digital front? We have so many tools that are available to us that I think that carriers can do more as well. When I started the marketing department at our carrier, I mean, it was something that was not even considered. It was something that each department head was trying to put together when they could and, you know, forget about trying to bring in some community-based projects. All of that really falls to the bottom of the priority pile because, again, we do have so many other costs. And by no means am I necessarily making money. I'm not a making money division. So you have to get creative with what can you do that's free, but actually shares the story of the carrier, shares the story of the private career college. How can you get people into the door and interested? And luckily for us, we have so many tools available to us, and the pandemic has actually benefited that as well, because everyone is now connecting on a digital level. Even people who maybe resisted it for the longest time are on Zoom, on Microsoft Teams, on WebEx, on every kind of tool out there, and they are active in that sphere. So this is the time where we can actually expose that and use it to our advantage.
I like how you talk about how you guys had a hard time finding someone. What we found that we had to do different is we had to open up a technology arm of our company, so it's not associated with transportation, to attract technology people to even come consider us, because most people would look at, I went to school for software development, you know, I do X, Y, Z. What can the logistics company provide for me that I want to do in technology? I want to do a startup, I want to work for Microsoft. So there's that stigma to it too, and that's why we have to go about doing things differently and kind of expose that in a different light, where it's, hey, you are working for a technology firm, but their solution, their problem they're working on is in logistics, and you have to brand it a little bit different, market it a little bit different to attract talent. Otherwise, even though it's the exact same area, exact same spot, exact same everything, it just has that little different startup look to it. It attracts different sets of talent.
Marketing makes an impact.
Work.
not to just like oversell what I do, but branding matters.
Yes, it does. Absolutely. I think it's very underutilized. One of the podcasts we had, we were talking about search engine optimization, how in our industry, there is almost like no way of getting a carrier unless you know. You know, and one of the challenges that we talked about, I think it was with Gary as well, about retail logistics. Like, we have all these young people going into these vendors, and they don't have the old relationships of the past. So how do they find a truck nowadays? They go on Google. They don't know about the different venues of going on there. Yeah. So majority of companies are not on Google. So you have a lot of people that don't have a website, and they're a fantastic truck company. And they see marketing as much as other people see trucking as a waste. They don't see any value in it. But there's so much value beyond their, not, I don't want to say selfish, but selfish need of their company. It's more about exposing that there's lots of these companies out there. And they're very diverse and they're very fun to work for. You just need to be more present out there. And social media, like we are doing here, you know, we talked about even doing a TikTok. Yeah. Style format with our drivers and things like that, just to kind of engage the young and the youth and more people to kind of get involved, because we love it. How do we get more people to love what we're doing as well?
I think there's a lot of opportunities, and the more that we can share about our industry is great.
Mr. KP,
I guess just touching on that, I think a lot of companies don't think of it on a long tail term. It's more so like kind of what Sophia mentioned, that most companies might consider like the marketing or the tech kind of a waste, or they're not really have the financial means to do it, but they don't look at it from a long-term perspective, that these are things we're doing that don't have an immediate return on investment, you can say, but they'll pay multiples down the line, right? And with these sort of things, it's an exponential return, and humans are not able to actually like realize that the exponential returns you'll get. They're more so linear thinking, right? So I think that's a struggle that we have as humans, or even companies, that, you know, we should maybe try changing our mindsets on.
Yeah, we are short-term based. We are. Well, we are short-term based as an industry, right? Like, just again, to the realities of our industry, but there's always opportunities, and there's a lot that you can still do that's for free. It's just about having the dedication and the content creation.
I was going to say, not now, with all this passion, I expect you to go and talk to the boss in the corner and tell him that we want more marketing on everything, more branding on everything that we're doing, more exposure. Sophia, I know we probably kept you way too long, and I really appreciate the time. Do you have any last comments, Mr. KP?
I'm good.
Sophia, do you have anything you want to touch upon that we missed that I didn't give you the opportunity to speak upon?
Other than I would love to provide my email and contact information for anyone who's listening in or watching the podcast and want to learn more about Truckers Against Trafficking or about our scholarship program or anything that we've discussed here today. I'm happy to share more information. And the same goes for other carriers or other schools. There's a lot that we can do if we just work together. And I think that's something that we should really do as an industry.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. You know, thank you so much again for taking the time and joining us. You know, it was a fantastic conversation. I think it's a conversation that we should have more often, as not only as an industry, but as a society. You know, whatever we can do, you know, just not watch a podcast as individuals, let us know. I'd like to get more involved after this conversation. I wanted to get involved more before, but now even more so. I'm excited for it. Again, thank you so much. As always, reach out to Sophia if you guys have any questions for her. Anybody that has any wants to know more information, always feel free to reach out to me or KP. We're here to help you guys out.
Thank you for having me.